Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode of Behind the Signs. Liz, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Good. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Joe Arenella, one of the moderators of Behind the Signs Facebook group and co-host of Behind the Signs podcast with...
Me, that's me. I'm Liz. I'm also Joe's daughter. Yeah. Uh-huh. If you don't know by now, now you know.
Multi-generational sign.
Yay. And we love it. Anyway, so glad you guys are here with us today. Today we have a really cool interview. We're going to talk a lot about sales and sales strategies and what has worked for a very successful sign company here in the Texas area. This is John Lewis of Lewis Signs. Lewis Signs has been around since 1977, I believe. It's a multi-generational sign company. So there's lots of learning and lots of growing and lots of strategy. So this is a really great talk. We're super excited for you to be here. But before we get started, we wanted to take a second to thank our sponsors.
Yes. And before we do that, I will say that John Lewis is an amazing guy, super successful sign shop. So I hope everyone listens to all the advice that he gives. He drops a lot of cool nuggets, that's for sure. So, but yes, we want to thank today's sponsor, Inktabo, who brings you Sign Tracker, of course, my passion project. So Sign Tracker helps you. Well, it's four things that it basically does, right? So it helps jobs from not falling through the cracks. It's one place to store all the project files and art files and permit copies and all the stuff that goes into a job. You create tasks so that your entire team knows what to do and they're not just running around like chickens with their head cut off. And it helps you to quote more accurately and profitably. So give Sign Tracker a try for free at sign-tracker.com. And if you, because you're part of the Behind the Signs community, once you sign up, if you forward your confirmation email to us, we will add a really hefty Behind the Signs coupon code to your account. That's all. That's my spiel.
Are we biased? Yes. But is Sign Tracker great? Also, yes.
And plus, Inktabo is very generous with our podcast. So they give us a lot of support.
And as always, we want to thank our friends at Sign Builder Illustrated. If you haven't had a chance, we have a monthly column in the magazine. You can check it out at signshop.com and also in the physical magazine if you are subscribed. Anyway, check us out there. Make sure to read the column Behind the Signs. And it's usually the same topic that we're talking about for the month. So we try to coordinate all of it. Just get you a little bit of education every which way you can get it. But more importantly, we want to thank all of you because without you, I wouldn't do this.
That's right. No, we do love our community. That's for sure. So Behind the Signs community, thank you for being here.
Yeah. Be sure to like and subscribe and share it with your friends.
Yes, for sure. And subscribe to our YouTube channel too. That helps us a lot.
It does. Or on Apple and Spotify. However you get your podcasts. We're at all the places now.
We're at all the places.
That's exciting, isn't it? Yeah. We're in all the places.
So before we jump in with John, I'm just going to say one last thing because, you know, we're working in separate studios today. All right. Well, let's, without further ado, let's jump on with John and get this show going. We're here today with John Lewis of Lewis Sign Builders in Austin, Texas. I guess Buda, Texas, technically, but you're an Austin, Texas sign company. That's for sure. So John, welcome to Behind the Signs. Liz and I are super psyched about chatting with you for a few minutes today. Before we get started, we always like to give you the opportunity to say hello, introduce yourself. I mean, the history of your company is rich. Obviously your parents started the company in 1977, I think I read on the website. And of course, then you took over the helm at some point. So if you could tell us a little bit about that story, we'd love to hear it.
Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me on. It's actually really is my pleasure for coming and sitting down with you guys today. But like you said, Lewis Sign was started in 1977 by my father and my mom, Bill and Ann Lewis. And it was started in their garage and just kind of, he had worked for another sign company here in town, Duplex Advertising down on, actually, I think their old shop building was kind of right where Austin American Statesman is now, right on the water. So kind of a little bit of history there. But anyway, it was Duplex Advertising.
Duplex Advertising. And I thought I heard of all the old sign shops in Austin. I don't think I ever heard of that one.
So he worked for Modern Sign and then Duplex. So this is, you know, this would have been, well, it was back in the 50s and 60s when he worked for those guys. So he just kind of enough is enough, probably some similar to where a lot of people that are in their own business now got to, and just, you know, I've got tired of getting treated like a dog is what he used to say. So anyway, so dad decided to start his own business and worked out of his house for a while, and then had a little shop, just kind of a one garage deal on Tillery. And then I believe it was in like 82 or 81, bought some property down on South First Street in South Austin. And we were there until 2009, which is when we moved out here to Buda, Texas, where we are now, right on the highway. So in 2002, my dad passed away from cancer. And that's kind of when the sign shop, sign company, everything was just kind of dropped in my lap at 29 years old. So talk about not knowing what I was doing. That's pretty much where I found myself, and just kind of taking the bull by the horns on my own, and just, you know, with 10 employees and doing a pretty good business, profitable, all those kind of good things were happening. And then, you know, as it kind of grew along there, just growing it into where we are today, we've had as many as 43 employees. We're hanging right around 24 employees now. Which is kind of a sweet spot for us. We have aspirations and to grow a bit over the next few years, but I don't think that I ever want to get back to 43 to 50 employees. I know you guys have some experience with that.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that I feel too for SignTech in my SignTech days. You know, once we get to 15 and 20, that was the sweet spot. I feel like once we started growing into the 40 and 50 employee range, when I sold it, it was 60 employees. I'm not sure I really made any much more money from 20 employees.
No. And I'll tell you, one of the things I love about having a small group is it's just been able to have personal touches on everyone. And when I had, you know, 40 something employees, there were some people there that I had no idea. And so part of the way that I lead is I love to be able to pour into people and to sit down and have time with them and ask them questions about themselves. And when you have that many people, it's just not possible, because I can't do that and my day job, you know, at the same time.
Yeah. 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 No, that's good. And I know this is off topic a little bit, Elizabeth, and you're going to,
I knew you were going to do it. As soon as you said it, I knew it was going to,
because I saw that on your website. We said, we love our people. First of all, I love love. So of course that stood out to me more than anything else on your website. So I just, that's
amazing. That's actually one of our core values is love. So love that.
Yeah, we have a team of 7, and I really understand what you're saying. Like, we've been as big as 12. And then I feel like for us, what we do, 7 is our, like, we could probably go to 8 right now. I'm wishing we had 8, but that's because I'm taking on PM things right now. But I think for us, it's just like, that's where we maintain that personal touch and that personal feel for our team. And it just makes a difference. Like, our team is, we always say, it's just kind of a cult. Like, it's kind of.
Well, that stood out to me too. And I think it has a lot to do with sales, actually, because it starts internally, right? Like, if people feel respected and cared for, then that's going to translate into great customer care and customer service, which will keep your customers coming back.
Yeah. And I think I was reading through the website, and the sentence that stood out to me the most, actually, and I think it's because it's how I approach sales and building relationships, is the sentence that says, "You see, we learned long ago that we're really in the business of building relationships." And it's like, yeah, like that is sales. That is marketing. So how has that mentality influenced your sales strategy?
Well, so, you know, going all the way back to the kind of the founding principle that dad started with was, you know, getting treated poorly by his former employer. And that was one of the things that was super important to him. And it continues, you know, that's kind of one of the legacies that we carry on today. And that's just making sure that we treat people, you know, the old golden rule is to treat people the way you would be, you know, the way you want to be treated. And I think kind of nowadays it's more the platinum rule. You treat people the way they want to be treated. And a lot of times if you're hiring the right people, it lines up with it's the way you want to be treated. So that's kind of how we go about, you know, even just as far as like it's hitting people out on installs or whatever. It's like, you know, if I put myself in that situation, what information would I want? Or if I'm, you know, building something in the back of the shop, what information, you know, making sure that our information is good. And then, like I said earlier, just kind of having, not only do I have a touch on people, but their managers, with just about every single, well, in every single department that we have, there's actual one-on-ones where the guys sit down with their direct manager. So they have the opportunity to speak truth to power.
You know, it's funny because it really sounds like, John, you're coming in on this middle ground that is between Joe and I. It's hilarious because he is like 100% your business is a sales organization. And I'm like 100% your business is not. Your business is a relationship building organization. And some people think those are the same. I definitely do not. But you're like in this middle ground where you're like, they can live together peacefully.
It's true. I mean, for us anyway, you know, I started off in the sign industry as a salesperson. So, you know, when I started my sign company with Robert, my business partner you brought up earlier, you know, we both came out of sales. And so I kind of had that idea that I was a sales organization first and then a sign manufacturing company second. I mean, that evolved over the years, but I mean, how do you guys, you know, view yourself? I mean, how do you view your sales strategy?
Well, so I had a conversation with a guy a long time ago, and he said, man, he said, it's real simple. Return people's phone calls, be nice to people, and just do what you say you're going to do. You know, so I mean, so many, you know, it's not that hard, you know, just be, it's like it comes down to an integrity thing, I think, for us. And we talked to so many customers that like, thank you for calling us back. Nobody will call us back. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. There's, you know, there's so much work in this town that needs to be done or can be done. And there's just people out there that are just not chasing it.
Absolutely. So my business partner is my husband. And he says the reason that we're as successful as we are is because we just do what we say we're going to do. Like 100%. We are organized. We are communicative. And we do what we say we're going to do. And that's really hard to come by. And it blows my mind. But you're very right. It just doesn't happen that often. It seems like common sense.
You know, In the Behind the Signs group, John, what comes up a lot, you know, when people sign up for Behind the Signs, we, you know, Liz and I ask them, hey, if you could ask one question that would have the greatest impact on your shop, what would it be? And at least 50% of it has to do with how do I get more customers, right? How do sales? And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, like we talked about a little earlier, that most sign shops are small. They're usually technicians, kind of like your dad in a way where they're being mistreated or they think they can do it better. And so they, you know, they break out and start their own sign company. But then it comes down to that whole thing about, you know, like the E-Myth, that book, right? So where it talks about, you know, how do you transition from a technician to a manager to an owner? And, you know, when you think about sales, that's probably a big role that's a big mindset shift. I think a lot of folks need to make. And I guarantee you that question wouldn't come up nearly as much in the community if folks started thinking about sales as a strategy. When I say sales, Elizabeth, I can see that smirk on your face. But I mean, I know it's the sales customer care. So today, anyway, I'm going to say all that to say there's three things that we kind of wanted to talk with you about today. We can just all kind of brainstorm together. But, you know, how should a company actively participate in networking or sales, and then developing, you know, how do you hire and develop a sales team, and then building and maintaining, you know, customer relationships? And we don't have to write a book on those three things, but I think if we can kind of talk about them a little bit, how your experience in that and then we'll kind of go from there. But
so I think, like, I know for me, like, I dread networking. It's really strange to hear a podcast host say this, but like, I hate public speaking. I hate networking. I am the most socially awkward person you will ever meet. Like, today and every day when I leave the gym, I've encountered one person. I will think about that interaction for the rest of the day because it was so incredibly awkward. Like, I'm just very awkward in person. But I do know that, like, you have to put your name out there. You have to network at some level. So what's your best advice for someone who, I mean, I've found ways that work for me, but like for someone who wants to make connections in their community that might lead to sales opportunities or maybe some events that you would recommend that they go to, what are some of the things that have worked for you for networking?
Well, so here recently, last couple of years, I've joined kind of a CEO peer group called Vistage. Maybe you guys have heard about it. And that's been really helpful for me just with getting to know and getting to know other CEOs. But then, you know, as you and Joe, you could probably relate to this is as you get, you know, further along in your career, there's less and less people that you can talk to. So as business owners, it's really important to find a group that you can kind of vent to, whether it be about insurance and or employees or overtime, you know, whatever the deal is. I mean, there's a litany of different things that you can talk about that you guys will connect on. But just as far as like trying to sales, and I believe that's where we're headed towards today, just trying to figure those things out. But and I would think there's a lot of peer groups. There's young professional peer groups. I know probably Liz, for you, this would be like, okay, this is my own little personal hell of trying to put myself in front of a bunch of people in a round circle like that. But at the same time, like everyone feels that way, you know, everyone walks into the room like that and everyone feels that way. So I feel like just get over yourself and be yourself. And I think that that's where a lot of those, I love to play golf, and man, that's one of the ways I connect on with some of my peers that way. And, you know, you're at a backyard barbecue and, you know, I always think about the stepbrothers thing. You're like, did we just become best friends? You know, it's that kind of thing when you find things that you connect on, whether it be golf or hunting or fishing or whatever it is, you know, whatever your passion is, I think that's kind of a icebreaker. It can be anyway.
I completely agree. I mean, I hate it. I dread it, but I do it all the time. I mean, we're 9 years deep in this business for owning, and we have never had a sales team. So all of that has always fallen on myself and my business partner. And then we have internal marketing, so brand management. But a lot of that for us has been peer networking. We are a design studio that focuses in signage and wayfinding. So, and then we broker manufacturing and installation. So we do all of it, but we don't have a sales team leading those sales. So for us, we focused on exactly what you said. We went to peer groups, right? So we know that in the design community, people that have knowledge of signage and wayfinding are pretty hard to come by. Like the actual knowledge of how it works, not just what looks good, but what's allowed and what works. And that's where we live. That's, you know, my background in signage is what, you know, paves the way for some of that knowledge. We have some of our team that also has extensive background in signage. And then the rest outside of me, the rest of our team is all designers. So it's, I'm literally the only one without a design degree. Everyone has one. So for us, we focused on that peer group and really networked to them. And that's been a niche for us, which has been really nice. But I completely agree. I mean, get over yourself. It sucks, but literally everyone feels the same way you do is the best advice you can give. Like, it sucks for everybody.
It does suck for everyone. I some really good advice that I was given years back, and I think it's helped a lot with, even with SignTracker too, but figure out where the people that you want to work with hang out, right? So you want to work with architects, where do they hang out? You know, do they have little local shows, trade shows? I know for us, you know, when I had SignTech, I figured a lot of architects and general contractors got involved with Habitat for Humanity. So we started hanging out there, and we would bring teams of people from the shop. Liz, I don't know if you remember this from back in the day, but, you know, once a month we'd bring one of the fabricators, one of the designers, one of the salespeople, and usually me, and would go do a build for the day. But that led to being invited to be on the Habitat for Humanity board. And then, man, that's, I just met a lot of, that became my peer group, right? And so it was all these folks that were, you know, general contractors, developers, architects. And, you know, I was the sign guy on the board. So all of a sudden, just, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars worth of work and tons of jobs all came through that. So, and that wasn't, that was, I mean, to me, I could still consider that, Liz, I know you might not, but like a selling activity. But, you know, learning to hang out where the people that you want to work with are is huge. And whether it's like golfing groups or young professional groups or BNI groups, Chamber of Commerce, I don't know, some people have really good luck with just, that.
It's not sales. It's building trusting relationships. That's mm-hmm. what we call it.
Okay, that's what you call it. Let me get my label maker.
Yeah.
One thing that I should mention is, you know, when I first took over the company and I decided, you know, we'd never done $1 million in sales. So I like set that as a goal, is trying to do that in a year. So one of the low hanging fruit is the install work, right? So the national companies I know that ISA has kind of a meet and greet, at least they used to at the big show, where you have locals or kind of regional companies and the big national companies, and they have like a, I don't know if they still do that or not, Joe. You might be able to speak into that. Yeah. And then here in Texas, it's TSA. You know, I know there's all kinds of different, you know, I know there's Mid-South and Tri-State and all there's, I'm sure every single one of those have the meet and greets and those kind of things. For me, that was actually boots on the ground, going and driving up to Dallas and kind of making the rounds, all the big ones in Dallas and then Houston. So that was, and that proved very, very great for me, just to be able to, because I think that they just want somebody that they can trust. And it goes back to doing what you say you're going to do, you know, just, you know, that you're going to be there on Tuesday, then be there on Tuesday, right? And always deliver the news, whether it's good or bad. People just need, I think it's, you can't overestimate how good communication is. And a good communication, I know we do a lot of sub out work, and we're talking to people in Florida and Indiana. And man, when they will not return our phone call, we don't know what's going on. It makes me want to jump on a plane and go out there and see what the heck's going on. So
I've done it.
just return somebody's phone call. Even if you've got bad news, it's okay, man. We're all grownups. It's not our first deal. We can handle it, really, you know? So that for me, that was what took me kind of the next level, was being able to, I didn't produce any of that work. I just, you know, any of the signs, it was all shipped in and we just went and put it up. So it was, you know, all we're doing is laying out labor for it, maybe a little bit of materials. So it's what I would refer to as kind of a low hanging fruit. Like, you want to go from, you know, you want to increase by 20-30% in a year, start hitting up some of those. Of course, you need to be licensed and you need to make sure that you're going to do what you say you're going to do. Otherwise, you're going to,
and have the beautiful fleet like you do.
Well,
that helps.
That was, you know, and I think everything that we've mentioned here is boots on the ground. It's not sitting on your tail in front of a computer trying to hope that, you know, hope's not a strategy. I mean, we know that, right? Like, overnight success, it only took me, 50 years to get it done almost, right? So it's one of those things to where it's not going to happen on its own. It's anything worth having. I was stalking you guys on Facebook. So, you know, I know that you guys ran a marathon, right? Yeah, congratulations.
Yeah, January. That's awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I'll never do it again.
That didn't happen on its own. Like, if you would have just ran, you know, 2 or 3 miles a week, you would have fallen flat on your face at the, you know, start line, or made it to 5 maybe, and then you're just cracked in 2. So it's all that legwork that you do ahead of time that will ultimately result in success.
So did you meet your goal? Did that help you meet your goal?
Yeah. So I had set my goal at $1 million and we did 1.6.
In that first year that you took over?
In that first year. Well, it was the first year that I got serious about taking over. So.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's great.
That's awesome.
Heck, 1.6 million is way bigger than a lot of sign shops ever even dream of. So that's it.
Yeah. Well, I think the couple of years before that, we did like 760. So we almost doubled in size in just a few years. And it was very simply what I just got through telling you, just it's going out there and asking for the work. You know, people, I want to work with people that are hungry, that want my work, you know?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And has that, I'm assuming that strategy, you've maintained it, right? Like you're able to, because that's something that a lot of people have asked us, like, yeah, you can make one good sale that maybe boosts your numbers for a year, but can you maintain it using that strategy, or have you been able to?
Yeah. So it's looked different from year over year. You know, of course that would have been like, oof, that was a long time ago. Let's just say that. So, you know, we've ebbed and flowed with, you know, growing and then shrinking back a little bit. We've not always done it right. We've, you know, messed things up, and I'm not sitting here telling you we've grown by, you know, 50% every single year. Otherwise everybody would know my name, but it's just a matter of maintaining and figuring out where your sweet spot is. And then, you know, but to answer your question, I think it was, figuring out it's all relationship based, and we're very blessed with having 48 years of history. It's hard to drive down any street in the city of Austin and not drive by two or three of our signs. So that is a blessing in and of itself. Having our name all over, and then, like Joe said, having a fleet of trucks that are all over the town every day, driving up and down the streets, doing that, got there doing the work. So we do have a lot of brand recognition, but at the same time, that doesn't mean that I don't have to go out there and earn the work, you know?
And I will say too, since I do see your trucks a lot, pristine.
Yeah, they are very clean.
They look really good. John, it doesn't matter what your sales level is now. Everyone's going to know who you are after this podcast, because Liz and I are famous.
So famous.
Start locking my door tonight.
Yeah, oh yeah, man. You better. But anyway, so all right, let's move on to the next one really fast. So talk about a sales team. So I know Liz, your whole team is technically a sales team, in my humble opinion.
But none of them are sales.
So do you actually have outside salespeople, and how do you hire within the industry? Do you just hire someone that has sales experience in a related industry? And then what are some of the things you do internally to, you know, whether it's quotas or sales meetings, or how do you manage that part of your business?
Right. Great question. So we have historically hired guys from inside, guys and girls from inside the industry. And sometimes it's worked really well. And sometimes you're just hiring away somebody else's problems. That's the reason why they're looking for a job. One of my buddies told me one time, he's like, people with like high level of common sense and they're really good at their job, they're not looking for a job. So it's, you know, they're not going to be the ones that are going to lay a, you know, that's not always true, but for the most part, the really, really good people, they're not out looking for a job. So, so typically the people that are coming into your door, they're running from something, and it may be fine. Like I've had some really good people that are either just moving, geographically just moving to Texas or whatever. So that's helped. But right now we have a staff of three full-time outside sales guys. And we got a couple of myself included, and my VP kind of handled some of the house account stuff. So I guess you could say five, but more like I would say four. I don't know that I really count. I'm usually doing so many other things that I've got a few different pet accounts that I handle. But for the most part, it's just those three outside guys. But we also, one of them's brand new. So it's a timely question about what do you do when a new guy comes along? And so we're not great at training. And I just actually finished up some coaching. And I would highly recommend that if you guys have the bandwidth, you know, sign companies out there, Sagefire is who we used. You guys might know Barnett Sign up in the Dallas area. Julie Barnett is kind of heading that up. And but yeah, Marco is who we've been working with, just been able to help us kind of just get our stuff together, as it were, like as far as getting our processes together. But it's forcing us to create processes so that when we bring in somebody new, it's just as easy as like running them through some modules and getting them trained up. So
we'll have to get the name of the group from you, you know, later on, or, you know, we'll put it in notes or something too.
But yeah, Sagefire, it's been really good. We did a month and a half, 2 months with them, and just, it's been, it's changed. I can tell you this, it's going to change the game for us. As far as, we're going through the whole team and running the working genius of Patrick Lencioni. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that, the ideal team player. Anyway, Patrick Lencioni, if you don't know his stuff, then you should go look it up.
Man, we're going to have to take all these notes.
Yeah, 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. It's a great book. But anyway, he's got a company called The Table Group, and it's basically, it's a personality. It's like a skills assessment, like a competency assessment. So we're doing that for every single employee and just find out where they're strong and where they're weak. And we've already found out that we've had some of the management guys in the wrong seat, just not in their competency. And it shows for the people below them, and it shows for them, they're just not having a great time at work. So we're actively trying to get those, it's the old good to great thing, just getting people in seats on the bus, right? So you shuffle them around and get them in the right seat just so that they enjoy what they do. And that's, going back to one of our core values is love. We want people to love what they do and who they work with. We spend too much time at work not to love what we do.
So that actually kind of brings up a good question that hits close to home for us. So we've never had a sales team. And the biggest reason for it is so a lot of sales teams are structured with commission-based pay, and you get a base and then a commission. That's pretty typical for sales teams. And with that, it's like the salesperson can bring in any project that they want to sell that helps them make the commission they need to make to live their lives, which I understand. However, we are very, very particular about the business that we take. We're very particular about the projects that we have our names on. It's just how we've always operated. So for us, we've always said we can't tell a salesperson, hey, you can't sell that one, because they have to make a paycheck. So how have you, you also seem to have a very strong moral compass and moral code in your company and a really strong, internal vision. How have you found that you can maintain that while having an outside sales team?
So great question. The short answer is we give them guardrails. And I've heard about people just saying, hey, we're not going to sell below a certain number. And that kind of feels bad to me. But because we don't want to turn away a banner when it might turn into a set of channel letters or a big pylon sign, right? Just so we'll leave that up to the sales guys for that. But we have gone through the company numerous times and just what is the question that we ask is, what's the greatest and best use of our resources? Because everybody knows that we only have so many hours in the day and we've only got so many people that can work those hours, right? So we figure out, you can spend 8 hours doing one thing that pays X dollars, and you can, spend the same 8 hours and make twice or three times that, right? So we figure out what is, what's the greatest and best use of our installs, of our fab, or, all the way from top to bottom. And so we've fired some customers because their stuff just takes too much time, and it's just, it's a hair pull the whole way, and then they're never satisfied. And so there's just a lot of times where we just say, you know what, either we tell them to go away with our price, or we'll tell them to go away. Just tell them to go away,
Yeah. We're not the best fit for this.
Yeah. That's, I'm sure you could probably use chat to figure out how to send them off away without hurting their feelings.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And I agree with that. Ours is definitely our guardrails aren't about, sales numbers as much as it is about literal fit of we just are very specific about the work that we do. And I think a lot of people are or want to maintain that, right? There are some people that just don't want to do certain projects. So I think guardrails is a great way to do that. That's good advice. And just being honest about that with your team up front.
Yeah, well, it's way better to do that than it is to have them do the legwork and get it in there. And you're like, nah, we don't want to do this. And they're like, oh.
And guardrails develop over time, right? So, I'm just cringing even now thinking of some of the projects that I said yes to.
Oh, I know. I remember ones when I started working back with you at the other company, there was a project, a very specific project whose name I will not name, that had 12 rounds of design. It was out of control.
So when we sold our company, you know, by the time we sold our company, we had a sales manager and five salespeople, outside salespeople. And we did do weekly sales meetings and had quotas and all that stuff. So, but it takes time. It takes time. I think it sounds like what you guys are doing just works really well for you. That's for sure. And three is a nice number too.
For us, like I've said many times, this kind of brings us to our last point in this subject, which is, I think that it's not about being a sales organization. It's actually about building and maintaining your customer relationships. Like for us, I've said it so many times on the podcast. I feel like I'm just beating it over everyone's head at this point. We don't call our clients clients. We call them partners. We truly believe in developing partnerships with everybody. We want to be the subject matter expert for people that people come to when they need design, the things that we do, right? Signage. That doesn't just have to be B2B. It's usually for us like architecture firms and designers. But that said, the sign industry isn't like a subscription model, right? Like there are some national contracts where it's click and repeat. I get that. But there are a lot of not national contracts where it's just single one-off signs. So how do you take that single one-off sign and make sure that you're building enough of a partnership that you can get repeat business out of that person and maintain that relationship? And how do you like make sure that you're keeping your customers or partners, if you will, happy enough so they want to keep coming back?
Well, and that you're at top of mind to them, right? So, maintaining relationships when they're not necessarily writing a check every single month.
For us, it's just being able to be consistent when they do call us and be able to, it's kind of like, you know, when you're traveling across country and you see a restaurant that it's in your town, right? That you know what you're gonna get when you walk inside, right? You're gonna get greeted. You're gonna, you know, if it's a nice enough restaurant or if it's like Chick-fil-A, right? If you go into Chick-fil-A in Buda, or if you're down at Corpus or in Houston or whatever, you know what you're gonna get. You know you're gonna get quality food. You're gonna get, you know, the quality customer service, and I feel like that's kind of, you know, I don't really ever come up with my own ideas. I always shoplift everybody else's ideas. And I feel like that just because I know that, so my strengths don't lie in coming up with my own ideas. So what I do is I'm paying attention to everything all the time. And if there's something that Chick-fil-A does, then I'm going to pull it in. If there's something that, you know, a car dealership that I really like does something that, and it treats me in a certain way, I'm gonna be like, hey man, how can I, you know, integrate that into my own business? But just being able to just consistently just, they know what they're going to get, right? So when they call me up, they know they're going to get, you know, quality designs. They're going to have the same person talk to them every single time. And that's, it goes back to Liz. I mean, I think that I kind of lean to more your way than Joe's, because I feel like it is a relationship. But, you know, that goes back to kind of my why of what I'm doing is I want to build character in the men and women that work for me. That's my whole thing that I want to do, is I want to develop character in those around me. I want to build leadership. I want to build, just have that integrity, high level of integrity with everyone that works for me. So I had a guy one time that would work for me, and he was doing something kind of shady off on his own. And I'm like, dude, that looks bad on us. He's like, no, it has nothing to do with you. I was like, it has everything to do with me. Because you represent me when you leave here. So integrity matters, you know?
Yeah, that's ours. So our internal motto has and always will be, do good work for good people with good people. And I think that all of those pieces work together. And that was something that carried us through. Like even, you know, we were still a fairly new company when the pandemic hit. And for us to be able to not have to fire anyone and not have to lay anyone off like that, or even furlough anyone, that's, you know, the way that we did that was we said, well, we have this team that has done good work with us and for us for so long and has brought our vision to life. So we need to make sure that we're there for them now, and just kind of pouring back into them and making sure that they're good.
Well, I think at the end of the day, too, people people like doing business with people they like, right? So
yeah, again, you know, you have to be happy at work, right?
Yeah, well, and like you said, John, do what you say, and you know, and be consistent. And getting. By the way, I should just say this as a side note. What is it? What do they say? Like 90% of creativity is stealing. So don't feel bad about that. It's inspiration. I call it inspiration. Imitating, I'm the same way.
Imitating.
I was inspired. Yeah. Like, no, you stole their idea.
Yeah. Hey, as long as it's not trademarked and you're not going to get sued, you're good.
Imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
They should be flattered, right?
Yeah. Hey, I will tell one little funny story just because it's sales related. And Liz, you remember because you were at the shop during this time. So John, I'm not joking, man. This happened. So hopefully this puts any bad story you have, you know, you won't feel as bad about it. You know what story I'm going to tell, right, Liz?
I don't know. I am so scared.
So we, you know, we did same with you, you know, we cycled in salespeople. We had some bad hires for sure. You know, some of the best hires were, like you said, though, people that came and moved from out of state that were moving here. We get some gems that way, but we hired this one person and they were out selling. We trained them, you know, they had some experience. I think it was selling print or something, but anyway, they went out, they sold a channel letter set to, a jewelry store, right? And so we did the job. We went out with the trucks, installed the sign. And later on that afternoon, we're all sitting in our office and like three police cars pull into our parking lot at SignTech. Cops get out. They come in. They arrest the salesperson. After the sign was installed, the salesperson went to the jewelry shop and robbed it on the same day. And the owner of the jewelry shop was like, had it all on tape. And he was like, wait a minute, this is my sign guy.
And again, that reflects on you.
but yeah. Oh yeah. He was not a repeat customer, by the way. I'm just going to throw that out.
Unfortunately. He was.
Yeah. But fast forward a couple years, I get a phone call. The sales rep gets out on parole and called and asked me if he could have his job back.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
we saw your desk. We were waiting on you to call back.
Wow.
We're not hiring at the moment, but thanks a bunch.
What is the level of like
disconnect?
What world is that? Okay.
Courage, we'll say. Do you have to have to do that? That's wild. Okay. Well, this has been a great talk. This is a subject that Joe and I could argue about we could argue about it all day. I think when it comes down to it, we do all agree on one thing, and that is building and maintaining long-lasting relationships is the key to success in this industry. It's the only way you're really going to make it. So with that, we always close our podcast with three rapid-fire questions. So these are just meant to be fun. Yeah, just the first thing that comes to mind. So I'll let Joe kick it off.
All right, so John, top lesson that you wish you didn't learn the hard way.
Oh, well, this is
so many.
This was double. Yes, right. So I'm a firm believer that grass grows in the valley, right? So I don't ever recoil from making a bad decision and going through the hurt that goes along with that. I just have a buddy that said, "Don't ever waste a hurt." You know, so if you're going through something hard, learn what you're supposed to learn out of it. That way, you don't go back, right? You don't ever do it again. But I would have to say not taking debt seriously and just, you know, it's kind of the American way of if you can afford the monthly payment, then man, you can afford it, right? So at one point I had a massive amount of debt and it took me probably about 10 years from about 2016 to just recently just got everything paid off. So it took about 10 years for me to crawl out of that hole. So if I had to say one thing, it would be and that I can put a caution out there to other sign business owners that I will tell you this, that debt free, Dave Ramsey's not lying. It's very free.
I like Dave Ramsey.
Yeah. So I would be cautioning people to, you know, wait till you can afford something to either pay cash for it or get it down to where it's manageable, that you have a plan to get something paid off in a couple of years. And that includes crane trucks and all the, you know, all the expensive stuff.
Yep.
Okay, this is my favorite question, but I'm going to give a caveat that says, I think we've just interviewed really nice people, which is great. I think it just says a lot for our industry, but I am ready for the drama of this question and no one has given it to me yet, which is fine. This is the question we call happy endings. So this is the happiest reaction you've had from a client, like at the end of a project, or the worst project you've ever done that you were just happy it was over.
Well, as you can imagine, been having done this for as long, I have both of those, right?
I'm ready.
So I'm going to go with the happy reaction with a great project. We just finished one up downtown, did some signage on a big hospital downtown. And it was one of those things where I had planned on doing it. And I had about 5 or 6 weeks in there, and just the pre-planning and everything that went along with it, man, we got it done in less than a week. So that was one of those that was like, yeah, that was pretty awesome. Yeah. And then we did assign this one. I knew this question was coming and I did not. This answer I'm about to give you right now is wasn't planned, right? So, and just came to my mind because you inspired me with your. Anyway, so it was a barbecue joint. And I'm not even going to give the town, I'm not going to give the name, whatever. But it was just one of those things where we used componentry on it. Man, we had the best intentions and we used componentry on it. It just failed and failed and failed. And finally, we ripped it all off and put channel letters on there because it was just, you know, it was this crazy faux neon stuff that was not perfected back then. And good Lord, I was so happy to get that one just like out of here. It was the... And even now, when I hear the name, it just like I can't even eat their barbecue anymore. It's just like, no, that's not true. I still love their barbecue.
Yeah, that's good.
I had an old project manager like from years and years and years ago reach out to me the other day. She's going through. She switched industries to the real estate industry because she loved it that much in the sign industry. And she just was talking to me the other day about how she was doing an interview for a new real estate company. And they asked her about like a really bad, you know, project that she dealt with. And she went through one of our sign projects that we did that is also one of my worst nightmare projects. And she was like, Liz, the PTSD that I felt just telling that story. So I get it. Yeah, totally get it.
Well, just every time I saw it, the name, I just knew like, I could just see the dollar signs rolling just because I knew how much it was. I mean, we've all been there, but oh my God.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's the worst. Well, I always think this question's a little weird for our closing question because most of the folks that we talk to really enjoy being in the sign industry. But if in another lifetime, if you were to do anything else besides being in the sign industry, what would you fantasize about doing?
Well, first of all, I can't imagine ever doing anything other than this just because I love what I do so much. I mean, and it's not even science cool and all that, but and being able to run my own company is awesome. But just the people that I get to work with on a day in, day out basis is so blessed and just thank the Lord every day on just being able to have really great people surrounding me, just their family, you know? So, but to answer your question, I think that I would probably be hunting or fishing somewhere on some sort of professional. But actually, that, you know, that wouldn't pay the bill. So I think probably I would be in ministry somehow, like serving the Lord some way, whether it be in a church capacity or in some sort of nonprofit. But just being able to use my time, talent, treasure in that way, just to been able to further the kingdom.
Yeah, that's sweet. Well, Elizabeth, you know what I would say about that, because that's my answer is this exact same answer. Like if I was doing something other than what I'm doing right now, I'd be my fantasy in ministry is more like a chaplain. So like a first responder chaplain. There's a hurricane. Get down there, you know, and do some ministry work. But anyway, but right now I'm a minister. I'm a minister in the sign business. So here I am.
Yeah. If I like... could make a living petting puppies. That's what
I'll say. That's a close second for me. I do love puppies. Yeah.
Just give me some goats and some puppies. I'd be happy.
I will say you wouldn't be the first one that said hunting and fishing. I think fishing guide has come up a couple times already.
Yeah. Well, I have some buddies that are fishing guides and they're like, you don't want to do this. This is like adult daycare.
Mr. John Lewis of Lewis Sign Builders Butte, Texas. We are so appreciative. I think there's some really good gems in here that are going to be helpful to the community. So thanks for hanging out with us. And one of these days we should visit your shop, Liz and I.
I know. I'm in Manchac, Texas. So I'm very, 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 I go to Butte every morning for the gym. I'm right on the line. I know. I don't know why when I think Lewis Signs, because I've passed it so many times, but I always think closer to San Antonio and I forget that you're just literally less than 10 minutes from where I am.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. It's a pleasure to carve out the time and wish you guys the best. And thank you again for having me on.